arguments that we should include. Very good. Thank you.
I think we can.
Well, we'll see you tomorrow at 8 o'clock at Herring Ramsey. That's when we're all meeting, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You should maybe state that. Mark.
Yeah.
I'm glad I quote my clients fixed fees.
Yes, exactly. All right.
Go ahead. I want to talk to you about the rate.
City Council will come back to order. We are sticking with 2 minutes. We still have 20-some people yet to testify, and we have a whole council full of agenda items yet to discuss. So we have found that what can be said really well in 3 minutes can be said even better in two. Really, honestly, we're especially looking for the best arguments, the best ideas, the best questions. You can say anything, and we're here to listen. But we share the concerns that are being raised, and so anything that you can provide us by way of arguments to get rate relief is what we find most useful. But any conversation is obviously welcomed as well.
The next three are D. White, Floyd Jones, and Stephanie Stewart. They'll be followed by Regna Merritt, Nancy Hatch, and Tom Watt.
For Floyd Jones, because of her years and years of advocacy on this, she gets 3 minutes.
Thank you. Let me go first. I'm Dee White. I'm speaking on behalf of the Friends of the Reservoirs. Friends of the Reservoirs does not support the proposed 12.9% increase in our water bill. We do not support spending $500 million for LT2 design and construction. We do not support rate increases for excessive spending in 2007, 8, and 9. 40% of the 12.9% increase is for deferred rate increases. Friends of the Reservoir supports negotiating the Portland Water Bureau's $400 million LT2 Open Reservoir Compliance Plan, delaying compliance. We support removing LT2 design and construction costs from this budget. We support collecting data in support of applying for the Safe Drinking Water Act Open Reservoir Treatment Technique Variance, confirmed as available by 3 legal opinions, and seeking permanent regulatory relief in the spirit of the ongoing efforts by New York City to permanently retain their Hillview Open Reservoir. There is no deadline in the EPA LT2 rule for complying with the Open Reservoir treat or cover requirement. There is no basis in the law for the Portland Water Bureau's suggestion there must be a technical reason for deferral. The State Drinking Water Program assumed primacy of the LT2 rule well over a year ago, including supervision of the Open Reservoir Treatment Technique Requirement. New York City's legal team, Foley Hoag, and now the Water Users Coalition's legal counsel, all confirm the applicability of the State Drinking Water Program variance for the open reservoirs. Our efforts in 2007 assured that Oregon law was in line with the Safe Drinking Water Act with regard to a reservoir variance. The Water Bureau's $400 million reservoir plan was brought to council without any public involvement in defiance of the intent of the 2004 Reservoir Panel Ordinance 36237. We urge you to renegotiate the reservoir compliance schedule, apply for a reservoir treatment technique variance through the state, and seek permanent relief as New York City is doing. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Jones.
Floyd Jones, and I'm also speaking for Friends of the Reservoirs. New York City is fighting for permanent protections of their open reservoir. They prepared a scientific data document in support of the safe drinking water variance. They submitted it as a deferral request, preserving their right to apply for a variance in the future. As you've already heard, they've already secured a deferral until 2028, and they're seeking an extension until 2034. New York is also pursuing other critical avenues to fight the unreasonable reservoir requirements. Specifically, New York is has taken advantage of President Obama's February 11th executive order to seek comment on streamlining or eliminating unduly burdensome federal regulations. On March 18th of 2011, New York City submitted substantive, detailed comments and objections to the LT2 open reservoir requirements, unlike the city of Portland. Once again, citizens are left to ask, where is Portland's voice? So we ask that you read this document, particularly pages 1 through 10. Pages 8, 9, and 10 are solely focused on LT2 and the open reservoirs. And I'm going to read some quotes from this document. The cost of complying with LT2 is not justified. Covering the reservoir will harm the environment and water quality because of the absence of sunlight and will make maintenance more difficult. The city has wastewater and water needs that are far higher priority from a public health perspective. Gaining more time to make an investment that the evidence shows will not produce a public health benefit simply defers an expenditure that should not be required in the first place. They go on to ask to say EPA should allow water suppliers to achieve the goal with unfinished reservoirs without mandating that they choose between two equally unacceptable choices, further treatment or coverage. They outline options in this document, and they advise that options would encourage investments that achieve cost-effective, tangible public health benefits without unduly burdening water suppliers and ratepayers. So Portland must immediately enlist the support of the congressional delegation in an effort to seek LT2 regulatory reform, while on a parallel path, renegotiate the compliance schedule, apply for the variance treatment technique for open reservoirs through the state, and seek permanent congressional relief. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Jones. Hi.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Stewart, and I'm the land use person with the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association, and, which represents about 10,000 people. In March of 2009, the Portland Water Bureau presented this council with a policy statement regarding LT2, and with your vote, you affirmed that the Water Bureau was to simultaneously pursue three compliance tracks for LT2, one seeking legislative relief, one seeking regulatory relief, and the final one, a traditional compliance tax track that would have us spend and build our way into compliance. At that hearing, the community and all of the commissioners were clearly in support of the first two tracks, pursuing legislative and regulatory relief, and commissioners and the Water Bureau staff openly recognized that those two tracks would need time to materialize results. Yet, when the Water Bureau left that vote here that day, they filed with the EPA a work plan that required them to launch expensive construction projects within days. In direct contradiction to that stated policy, Water Bureau had developed a construction timeline that would dig us in deep long before any other form of legal compliance had a chance to materialize. Since 2009, Water Bureau seems to have invested very little in the first two compliance tracks, but they've spent on construction. Just last month, at the invitation of EPA, PWB had the chance to comment on specific regulatory flaws found in regulation like LT2, and they submitted just a few disjointed paragraphs in which I can find only three sentences dedicated to LT2. Compare that with NYC's response, and we see the difference between being committed to a regulatory reform track and not being committed to a regulatory reform track. Today, I am asking you to pause the Water Bureau spending on all LT2-related projects, including Powell Butte 2, Kelly Butte, and the Tabor Disconnect projects, which will come before you soon, because we fear that unless you stop their efforts on the construction track, they won't dedicate their efforts fully enough to the other tracks. We're also asking for you to seek a delay in the construction timeline that they originally set with EPA, and we're asking that you investigate legal alternatives for compliance.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Next three are Regna Merritt, Nancy Hatch, and Tom Watt. They'll be followed by Patricia Murphy, Bill Harris, and Eric Fernandez.
Hi, welcome. Glad you're here. Who would like to begin?
I'll be happy to go. Thank you. My name is Regna Merritt. I'm on the Environmental Health Committee with Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. I've worked for over 20 years to protect the Bull Run and the full drinking water supply system. And today, thank you for your efforts to try to stave off the $100 million in unnecessary Bull Run treatment. But primarily, I'm here, as all of us were, to discuss the $400 million big ticket item, which is going to drive our water rates up 85% in the next 5 years. And when I say we, I'm not just talking about the people that you've heard from today, but 25 neighborhood associations, OLCV, a Teamsters local, the Portland Business Alliance, and the Portland Small Business Advisory Committee, lots of people who had to leave to go back to work. So we're exercised about this, and this group is not going away. The good news is that the City Council can exercise control to stop wasteful spending, to provide an open airing and delay for a plan and schedule for the reservoir covering, and the City Council can exercise control to bring water rates to a sustainable level. Why is this important? Wasteful spending. The Water Bureau just spent $45 million to upgrade our reservoir system, and they concluded the last contract to do so in March of 2011. That was to carry us through to 2050. Number two, the Water Bureau plans to spend $137 million to build a 50-million-gallon reservoir at Paul Butte 2, whereas Seattle is spending $57 million for a 60-million-gallon tank reservoir. We want to know why that is happening. Three, there's evidence that there are cheaper ways to go to comply with LT2, and there are several legal means to achieve a full-out variance. Why is this important? The City Council, this council, must correct a terrible problem with public process and public trust. In 2009, as referred to before, the Water Bureau marched in here with a plan that they said they needed to submit to the EPA that afternoon, and they did. And it was the full plan for reservoir burial construction with a timeline that they created. This council had no opportunity to deliberate about what the impacts were going to be or what other options were available to them.
I need you to wrap up.
And additionally, you just heard about the Executive Order 13563. The council needs to make sure that the city improves its participation and opportunity to improve a burdensome, onerous LT2 open reservoir rule. So in closing,
do you know if that executive order can supersede legislation?
The legislation, the law, is the Safe Drinking Water Act, and we believe that you can.
The New York City Obama.
Yes.
Regulatory.
It's a regulatory reform periodic review.
The Obama regulatory reform.
Yes.
By executive order.
Yes.
Can it supersede provisions of a congressionally enacted Safe Drinking Water Act? Just asking. It's a factual question.
I don't think that they're looking at the law, and the law supports us. They're looking at the rule, LT2 rule, which is onerous and burdensome.
And
that can change.
That
and
can change.
If they
and
said
still,
in May
and still
and
comply,
or June, they will release and, their it, plan.
And still comply with the federal law?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'd like some backup on that.
It's in the document that I handed out to you, Council.
Thanks. Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate you all being. Oh, did everyone get a chance?
No.
Please begin.
Hi, my name is Nancy Hatch. I'm here to testify both on behalf of myself as a resident of Northeast Portland, but also on behalf of the Sierra Club, which I know has endorsed at least three of you currently, and I believe all of you at some time in the past. The Sierra Club would like to inform you of its opposition to the city's proposed rate hike as it fulfills long-term 2 enhancement surface water treatment, LT2. In many places, the Sierra Club has worked to make sure that water treatment standards are implemented. However, in Portland, the Sierra Club loves to boast about how protection of Bull Run's watershed exemplifies why, when left to our own devices, Mother Nature is the most effective and the least expensive way of water treatment. The Sierra Club is thankful that the City of Portland is planning on submitting a variance regarding the Bull Run source water treatment and realizes that this EPA regulation has put the city between a rock and a hard place in many ways. It also believes that the city must do more about the proposed timeline for covering and burying water reservoirs, which it believes is premature. Rather than passing the rate hike, the city should submit variances both for Bull Run source treatment and the city reservoirs. Portland should look to deferrals, variances, and strategies that other cities such as New York City have used as models. And Portland must postpone the possibly unneeded reservoir and treatment plans and submit a new proposal and timeline schedule to the drinking water, to the state's drinking water program, realizing in this case it puts the timeline within the control of Portland based on what time it gives when it submits. Most significantly, Portland must not presume that it will inevitably have to treat the Bill Rahn water source or cover the reservoirs. It also has the option under this current rule to simply treat the water as it comes out of reservoirs, which may well be less expensive, but to my knowledge hasn't even been considered. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Appreciate it. Hi.
Hi. Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, good afternoon. My name is Tom Watt. I'm president of Teamsters Local Union Number 305 and a Portland native. I'm here today on behalf of those who will be most impacted by the Water Bureau's proposed 5-year 85% wage increase, Portland's working families. Mm-hmm. Teamsters Local 305 members work at plants across the city for well-known companies in the dairy, bakery, food processing, and laundry industries. Many of these companies are major customers of your Portland Water Bureau, Darigold, Sunshine Dairy Foods, and Alsco, to name a few. Rate increases of the magnitude that you will vote on next week create a particular hardship in these industries where commodity prices, milk for example, dictate how much producers can earn on their product. Prices cannot simply be raised to pass along new costs such as higher water rates. Therefore, producers must either eat the difference or cut costs elsewhere in the production process. This puts increasing downward pressure on wages in what is already a tough economy. Moreover, the working families we represent suffer a double whammy when the City Council raises water rates dramatically like this. Not only is their income potential diminished, but they then have to deal with the higher water bills at home. We're burning the candle at both ends. Making Portland a harder place to both work and live. Also, the jobs these projects may create are not the type of jobs we need in our city. We need long-term, permanent jobs like those the companies mentioned previously provide. We do not need temporary, short-term jobs that may not even be performed by Oregonians. Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, this is preventable, and we need your leadership to prevent it. Portland's high water costs are creating an unsustainable economic environment for working families. If you wish to make Portland a place where they can live and work, have a good-paying job, and afford a home, please vote no on the proposed water rate increases. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Thank you all.
The next three are Patricia Murphy, Bill Harris, and Eric Fernandez. And they'll be followed by Brad Yozzolino, Diane Tweeten, and Tracy Marks.
Thank you for being here. Thanks for waiting. We need a third person. Third person on the list?
We'll take the time.
I'll give mine to you.
Patricia Murphy, Bill Harris, Eric Fernandez. I'll go ahead. Brad Yozzolino.
Next.
Diane Tweet. Oh, here you come. Sorry.
Great. Please begin.
Mayor and Commissioners, thank you. My name is Patricia Murphy. I'm a naturopathic physician, licensed acupuncturist, and I'm an instructor in environmental medicine. And I'm here to ask you to vote no on the water rate increases. I think I can speak for most people in Portland when I say that my budget already is pretty much stretched to the max. And to approve projects that are really unnecessary as far as public health goes, it is really a disservice to the citizens of Portland. We really don't need them. I'd like you to call for a timeout on the new LT2 planning and construction projects, and to submit a new plan and schedule for the reservoirs to the state, and to apply to the state of Oregon for variances for the Bull Run treatment and the covering the reservoirs. We all know we have a unique watershed in this area. The water's pristine. Please don't mess it up.
Thank you, Doctor. Hi.
Members of the council, I'm Bill Harris. I'm a resident of Northwest Portland for the last 41 years, a supporting member of PSR and Oregon Wild, among other organizations. I am really grateful to have a city government and its water bureau that has the potential to be overwhelmingly devoted to a sustained availability of our stellar water supply. We're really lucky to be residents of this piece of Earth. It's quite clear that a lot of effort will be required to keep our water good and to use it in a manner that our use volume matches the recharge volume. I'm a recently retired physician. I can claim no specialty training in public health, preventive medicine, or water engineering. I am, however, an ardent student of individual and societal health and of the challenge of a sustainable society. This challenge can only be met with vigorous public education towards accurate insights into the details of problems in the commons and immense commitment to truly useful solutions by our decision makers. You, in this case, our city council. I'm grateful for the considerable publicity of the clarification of the risk of protozoa contamination and the great work done with deliberate disciplined sampling for contamination. This sampling has clearly demonstrated that our open reservoirs are not a risk to public health in general, nor even the health of people with less than healthy immune systems. Reservoir covers and additional purification efforts would be very misleading to our public, suggesting that the water supply is safer when its safety is really not being changed. I suspect with population growth and climate change, there's going to be large expense ahead to bring about sufficient water conservation that our prioritized use is kept in line with the available annual recharge. We need the money then. Please change course. We will stand behind you if you will make a major change of course on this issue.
Thank you, Doctor. Sir?
Brad Yazzolino, artist. I've been on this subject for 20 years also. Change course is right. Pause, delay. Think about what history is going to look, how history will see this. As Stephanie Stewart said earlier, just a few minutes ago, the EPA is now listening to people who want to criticize their current regulations. Well, Portland needs to make a big response to that because it will be tragic. History will see it as ridiculous if Portland goes ahead and spends all this money for something we all agree we don't need and destroy what essentially is, I've said it before, a beacon to the world about how to collect clean water without involving the giant water industry. So let's go back. 1894, you know what the committee of the Water Committee wanted? They wanted water to be free for all taxpayers in the Portland area. And then it went, you know, to 1 cent, 10 cents, and all that. And that's because they understood that the water was essentially rainwater. And we need to find the courage. I hope you can all find the courage to change course on this because, you know, I've got the footage to make you look like villains. And I don't really think you are villains exactly, but it's a crossroads. So let's call for a timeout on the new LT2 construction projects, submit a new plan, and don't cover the reservoirs because people will know about that for decades to come, and they'll know who covered them. And they'll know why, because the EPA will change the law later that you didn't have to cover them. And then who wins? The water industry. Apply to the state of Oregon for variances for Bull Run and reservoirs. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Thank you all.
Next three are Diane Tweeden, Tracy Marks, and Carol Adler.
Thanks for waiting. Glad you're here.
Let's go with Nancy Matila, Keith Vernon.
One more.
David Wagner.
Okay, thank you. One more. Oh, Mr. Wagner's here.
Okay.
Great. Hi, please begin.
My name is Diane Tweeden. In 2003, there was an attempt to force the building of a filtration plant on this community. The community spoke, and the second panel determined this would be a big waste, and besides, there wasn't a law. There was another attempt to get surrounding water districts to buy into Portland's water system, which would have provided the money to do it. They also declined. So the companies who would benefit went back and passed a law to force another version. Mayor Potter, who actually cared about what is in the public good, made it very clear that all of this isn't needed in the white paper and proposed economical alternatives. All of that was rejected. We are in a variance process where testing is being done by those very same companies. So even while we are protesting what is unneeded, they are still making money. Left out of the Water Bureau formulas for rate increases is the fact that the main driver will be the interest on the debt of what will easily add up to over $1 billion total for what is not needed. It will hurt small companies, people who are already struggling. It will hurt the schools, making money even tighter. The problem is that the people who have come up with this scheme don't care. They just want the money that it will bring them. It doesn't matter if it's even needed. Wendell Potter, a former health insurance lobbyist, was visiting family and stopped at a medical expedition where people were being treated in animal stalls because they couldn't afford insurance. Weeks later, he was on a corporate jet eating off gold-trimmed china. He knew where that money came from and decided he just couldn't do it anymore. We're told it's the law. In 2004 to 2009, a New York Times article, the Clean Water Act was violated 506,000 times. 60% were significant noncompliance. In coal mining areas, water is so toxic it burns the skin and destroys the tooth enamel. There were only fines in 3% of the cases.
Thank you. We need to, your last point you want to leave us with?
So if we refuse to follow this new law because we don't want to spend $1 billion on something we don't need, we will be fined. Well, then all we need to ask is, how is it that the Environmental Protection Agency has become the environmental protection racket?
Thank you very much for your testimony. Sir.
Hi, my name's Keith Vernon. I'm Senior Vice President of Weston Investment Company. We have about 200 employees in town. We own and manage about 2,500 apartments in the city, providing housing for low and moderate income people. Obviously, water rates will have an impact on our renters, and we're concerned about that. In addition, when I was listening to the testimony earlier today about what the water rate increase, I want to also refocus on, we're already paying for capital improvements in the current budget, let alone the increase. So typically, we only talk about the increase in the budget when actually we have a significant amount of capital improvement in the current budget. I think that one of the things that we would really like to support you to go back to the state of Oregon, request a waiver, and know that you'll have your community behind you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Hi.
Hi, Mayor Adams, City Commissioners. My name is Dave Wagner. I'm here on behalf of the Portland Water Users Coalition. I'm with a law firm called Reed Smith. I'm an environmental attorney. And up until about 3 years ago, I was with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in Washington, where I was in legal office working on the rulemaking. Office of the General Counsel develops the federal rules on environmental issues. And we were asked by the coalition to analyze the LT2 rule, in particular, were there any legal paths forward for the city. So a colleague of mine who is a professional engineer, we looked at the issues and identified that, I guess bottom line is that there are no legal barriers blocking the city from either seeking a variance or an extension from treating or covering the reservoirs. In particular, or I guess put another way, there's a legal path forward where the city can seek a variance from the state, not EPA, from the state. They have primacy, of course. There's a state statute that allows a variance from treating or covering the reservoirs. And I think under a reasonable interpretation of this statute, the state could grant a variance to the city. And I heard earlier that the health authority has discretion to issue an extension for the state scheduled deadline. Also, we looked at whether there were any federal rules or state rules that would allow for an extension as well. And we didn't find any, but we did see that there were several other implementing regulations under the Safe Drinking Water Act that do allow for modifications for additional time. And I think there's more than just discretion for construction, but other reasons to seek an extension of time should you want to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here. Thanks for your testimony.
Next three are Kent Crayford, Mike Thayer, and Ruby Bloom. And they'll be followed by Ted Whitehead, Matt Iverson, and Marilyn Cooch.
One more?
Go with Ted Whitehead.
Anybody else? Okay. Hi, thanks for being here.
Good afternoon. Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Kent Crayford. I'm the director of the Portland Water Users Coalition. We are a group of 17 large industrial customers in the city of Portland. Yesterday, Portland voters sent a very strong message to their elected leaders that in this weak economy, they simply cannot afford $500 million in construction projects for schools, no matter how necessary or justified. So given that, we want to know, how can we expect them to afford $500 million in new water projects that are now scientifically proven to be unnecessary and unjustified? The 85% water rate increase that you're considering today over the next 5 years is a major and catastrophic increase, especially for businesses and residents struggling in the weak economy. What we'd like to specifically see is the city pursue all its options to avoid or delay these $500 million in treatment and reservoir projects. And what we now know and what we're very encouraged to find out is that you do have legal and regulatory options to pursue a variance or a delay of those projects. Specifically, we now know that the state is the decision maker. They can grant a variance, but we need to ask. That's for treatment and reservoirs. We know that the state could grant a modification to our construction timeline, but again, we need to ask for that. We also know that we have other options to comply with the rule, even if we're forced to comply and don't get a variance or an extension. We could also seek other options, like treatment at the outlet, which the Water Bureau's own consulting analysis shows could cost us, or save us, excuse me, hundreds of millions of dollars. We'd like to know why that option is not being considered as an alternative to the $500 million option before you. Basically, we have a lot of options. We'd like to see the city pursue them, and we look forward to working with you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Ted Whitehead, and I'm the Food Safety and Quality Assurance Manager at Yocream International. And with respect to the day's agenda and the time of those present, I'm going to slightly abridge our comments, as at this point the arguments, and very good arguments, have been set forth, and the only thing that we can add to this is our support for the variances to the LT2 projects. Although we've been fortunate through this recession and have actually been able to increase our workforce by 60% over the last 3 years, in light of a recent change in our ownership and with this and other costs continually rising within our business and the fact that we are a fairly substantial water user, we are concerned in-house about the potential longevity of our manufacturing plant in Portland should things continue to proceed in this direction. We're also concerned about the pursuance of cost increases that have been shown to be unnecessary with respect to public health and which have alternatives for variances. So therefore, we urge the council to act on the expressed concerns of its citizens and its businesses by pursuing these various options to the LT2 water treatment and open reservoir projects. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Sir?
Hi, my name is Mike Thayer. Thank you all. Water is sacred. It is our most precious resource. All life comes from water, and so it must be safeguarded and stewarded as the sacred life-giving force that it is. We've all been talking a lot in our heads, logically, but I'm asking you all right now to take this into your hearts, to open your hearts to our concerns, to consider the next 7 generations and the impacts of what you are considering will have on our children's children. Please take the spirit of clean, living water into your hearts. Take the spirits of your grandchildren's children, whose life comes from this water, into your hearts. And please join us in absolutely committing to keeping our water system the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your testimony.
Was there a Marilyn Cooch? Okay. Marilyn, thank you. Go with Jonathan DeWitt and Marcus Chase.
Those the last two?
No.
Who else?
Let's see. Was Matt Iverson and Michael Morgan?
Michael Morgan. Great. Hi, would you like to begin?
Marilyn actually left briefly, and she asked me to say a couple of sentences on her behalf, and it'll be very
We're not
very,
allowed to do that, but brief. You can sign up. Okay. Just for, I'll let you go, because I don't know if you've been here before, but you can't trade out slots.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Otherwise,
I've been here
the whole
for
day
hours.
Would be people trading out slots, but for you, I will make
Thank
an
you.
Exception.
I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for waiting.
I would just, there's been a lot of talk about precedents today. Oh, my name is Maura Kamenash. And I've lived here for the majority of my 26 years. And again, there have been a lot of talk about precedents. And I would just, one of the things I love about Portland and about Oregon is that we are a creative, independent, and unique state. And I don't understand why we're not working together, both the Water Bureau and the Commission, to find solutions that follow with those characteristics.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. My name is Matt Iverson. I'm representing myself as a resident of Portland, and I'm representing Public Harvest, a local nonprofit that is dedicated to careful use of the commons and a healthy community of natural community and of the local population. What I wanted to bring to your attention is, I guess, the effect that this would have. Obviously, this will have an effect on the water rates anyone pays, but for burgeoning urban farmers who are trying to get going in this city, having an 85% increase in the water rates over the next few years is going to be a huge disincentive to those people to get started. And I know in the Bureau of Sustainability, the Urban Ag Subcommittee, as well as other people in the office, are working on rezoning and grant funding and other sort of initiatives to support the growth of urban farming in the city. And this is directly going to come smack up against people who are operating on a really, really thin profit margin. And I think that needs to be considered. As an individual, I would like to state that, you know, I live in Portland because I value the ecosystem we have here, and I value what I see as the city and the people who live here, the initiative to be a model to the rest of the country and to the world on how to live sustainably. And one of the things that we have there is the healthy, functioning watershed at Bull Run, and we need to preserve that, if only as a model to the rest of the world on what they should be doing. Anything other than that would be, it would make us look quite foolish if we claim to be leaders in sustainability. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi.
Hi. I'm Michael Morgan, and I live in Portland. I fear that replacing the open reservoirs with underground storage would be a huge waste of money. Any change to our water system needs to be based on science, and replacing the reservoirs as planned by the Water Bureau is not based on science. I would like to refer to to Dr. Thomas Ward at OHSU and his letter to Commissioner Leonard dated April 19th this year, where he talks about the importance of using science and surveillance information to determine whether the reservoirs require additional treatment measures. He said that, to paraphrase, we have excellent surveillance water quality data and epidemiologic data that, in his strong opinion, shows our current system provides us with safe water. And he recommended that the Water Bureau request an extended LT2 compliance time frame. And Dr. Gary Oxman at the Multnomah County Health Department, in an interview with KBOO, said that we have a wonderful water source, a well-designed and responsibly run system, and excellent water. And he has not detected any sign of illness associated with the current water system, so they would not expect fewer illnesses to occur after covering the reservoirs. I also agree with Dr. Oxman, where he said that the best thing the community can do is to come together and debate the issues honestly and openly and to be an active part of the process. And that is part of the gift we can give to future generations of Portlanders. So I'm asking you to vote against raising the water rates, stop approving LT2 compliance construction spending, direct the Water Bureau to request an extended LT2 compliance time frame for reservoir projects similar to that of New York City, and research alternative LT2 compliance options, and in doing so, allow community participation and use science and carefully collected surveillance data to guide your decisions.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for your testimony. Appreciate it.
There was Jonathan DeWitt or Marcus Chase. We're not here. Okay, let's go with Herschel Soles, Tom Keenan, and Rosemary Opp.
How many are after that?
Thank you. And Gary Berger was the last person who signed up.
Mr. Berger? We have one more seat up here if anyone wants to testify that didn't show up, or didn't sign up, rather. Thanks. Please begin. Glad you're here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Tom Keenan. I'm president of Portland Bottling. I'm also representing the CEIC today. The city could spend hundreds of millions less to comply with a federal LT2. The Portland City Council has been steered into the current $400 million reservoir replacement program, never being offered the opportunity to consider, much less choose, another less expensive option, such as the treatment at the outlet. The City Council can still change the plan. The city has strong justification to pursue a reservoir variance with state regulators. The state of Oregon has been delegated primacy for implementation. EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson stated that if the state of Oregon grants a variance to the city of Portland, the EPA would work to support the state and that the EPA doesn't expect that we would be working in opposition to the state. This will have an impact on business, jobs, quality of life, and water. I venture to say that none of you may be commissioners today if you had listened to those who said it was impossible. We look to you to lead, challenge, and make the decisions to fight. The mandate is clear. Can the City of Portland delay the unnecessary $400 million reservoir projects? Yes. Can the City of Portland obtain a variance from the reservoir treat or cover mandate? Yes. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Ma'am?
My name is Rosemary Opp. I'm the chair of Mill Park Neighborhood Association. We've had many meetings about this topic, and I will tell you that the people in that area are very concerned about the water rates and the serious degrading of our drinking water. What I'm going to testify now is as an individual, because I want to bring up this whole matter of this road that we're on, which I think very well could lead to privatization. I will read from the Food and Water Watch an article called Money Down the Drain. Greedy multinational corporations are after your water. And if you don't stop them, it could cost you a lot of money. Privateers may be creeping around your town hall. Your town is sitting on a gold mine, your water supply. Corporate executives know this, and they may be trying to weasel control of your water from your city town. Corporations may try to exploit your struggling city. Because of the economic crisis, cities and towns across the nation are going broke. And large corporations are offering large sums of cash in exchange for control of our valuable drinking water and our wastewater systems. You might not know what's happening in your own community. Your mayor or city council may be cutting a deal behind your back. They could be trying to sell off control of your water without even telling you. We've seen it happen far too often. Now, I hope that's not the case here, but this whole matter of privatization and debt is something that I want to bring up today, and that is why I'm asking you to stop these projects right away, because we need to stop accumulating debt. We do not know about the uncertainty of the economic picture internationally, nationally, or locally. And stopping the projects would be the best thing that we could do at this point. The debt issue is very big. I see the variance as a temporary measure. However, I'm concerned that it allows spending to continue. A waiver is what our community and water deserves to end this LT2 rule.
Thank you.
Permanently. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Sir.
Hi, my name is Michael Wilson. We don't need to be afraid of the EPA. We need to stand up for what's true. And there are a lot of people here that have made excellent points. We have science on our side. And so we, the people, are behind you 100% if you'll stand up to the EPA and just don't cooperate with them on the LT2 rule. Yeah, we can go ahead and ask for waivers and variances and that sort of thing, but to spend another dime correcting a problem that doesn't exist, we need to stop that. You have the power as our elected leaders to rally the public on your side. You have a large group of people here today, and it's not even a half of a percent of the people who would be behind you if you decided to stand up to the EPA. So there's nothing to fear. It's a kind of a David and Goliath situation. The public opinion in the United States would be on our side 100%. There's nothing to fear here, and we need to stand up to them and stand up for the truth, which we have on our side, and stand up for our pure water.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all. Thanks to everyone who testified. We're going to have, do you want staff to come up? So staff could come up for questions and answers, council discussion. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, everybody, for testifying, and thank you, staff, for your patience. Director Schaff, what are the consequences if we don't comply with the schedule that we submitted? What's the fine? What are the timelines for consequences?
Under the Safe Drinking Water Act, the potential fines are in the neighborhood of, I think it's $5,000 a day. Presumably, they would be for each of the five individual reservoirs. At some point in the last year, I calculated it out for you that it was in the neighborhood of potentially $64 million a year. We're a little ways away from that. The EPA indicated when they originally approved the schedule that we would have to take immediate steps to begin compliance, and that we had to put together a schedule that had milestones that they would be able to enforce. So I can't tell you today if we miss the first milestone of, you know, beginning construction on Powell Butte 2 by June 1, whether or not what they would do, but we would be in violation. Long-term, if the city council were to somehow decide we simply aren't going to comply with LT2. They have the ability to intercede and, in effect, take us over. That's a long ways away as well. We would be on April 1, 2014, if we don't have a variance or if we haven't built a treatment plant. We will not be providing drinking water that meets federal and state regulations, so we're going to be in automatic violation of all 19 of our wholesale water agreements. I don't know what the remedy would be, but every one of those wholesale providers would have a remedy. At the same time, since if we aren't in compliance with the Safe Drinking Water Act, presumably everybody who uses drinking water as a customer and then uses it as part of their business would potentially have issues. So, for instance, I'm just thinking You've got Safeway and Fred Meyer who have those little sprayers over their vegetables. Well, they're going to be spraying using water that doesn't meet federal and state drinking water requirements.
That's not until 2014, right?
Yes, that's not till 2014. Although the reservoirs, I can't tell you exactly what happens on June 2nd if we haven't started construction on Palo Butte, if this, what the state would do.
June 2nd of this year?
Yes, that's one of the deadlines.
And what was the July 5th deadline that you mentioned also?
Excuse me?
You mentioned July 5th as another start date.
Right. Our deadline is June 1st, 2005, and we anticipate on July 1 that we'll actually be, we'll be moving forward. You will
2005.
Be.
2005.
What did I? Sorry. 2011. We're coming to you to award the construction contract for Palo Butte next week. That starts the construction. So we will be in compliance if we do that.
And if we award the contract and then we find that we can get a delay, what happens to the contract?
Well, if we can get a delay, well, I don't know what happens to the contract.
So I think that's something that I'd like to know. There's a number of things that I know we have to approve a rate today in order to be able to be in compliance with the state financing rules. Is that correct?
We have to send to make any amendments today, the actual
make
vote.
Make any amendments. So, I don't have enough information to be able to know what the rate is. In particular, looking at OMF's analysis of your rates and looking, and I do have the 5-year rate forecast. I don't have the 10-year, which was, I misspoke earlier. But I'm looking at the deferred rate increases, which are 5.7% this year, 4.9% the year after, and 4.3% the year after that. I'm wondering why the biggest bump this year. What are we paying for with that 5.7%?
I can give you, I will send you a spreadsheet that shows the deferred increases from the very first year of deferral through the end of the deferrals.
I have that, but I don't know what I'm buying with that money. What level of service, what particular items are we funding with that increased rate level, which was, or that, yeah, that increased rate level, the maintenance and the staff were hired back in 06, 07, 07, 08.
Oh,
and we used the 13
yes.
million reserve fund, or whatever it's called, the
yes.
rate stabilization fund, to pay for that. Why are we going for 5.7% this year instead of averaging out the next 3 years to 4.95?
We could do that. But what would happen is that next year, that deferred rate increase would have to be higher.
Well, no.
And the year after.
The average of the 3 years, 5.7 this year, 4.9 the next year, and 4.3 comes out to about 4.95. So it wouldn't be any more this next year. It would be more the year after.
Right. That's what
but
I just
hopefully
said.
We'll be more out of the recession at that point, and people will be.
But to be clear, he gave you the exact answer. He said the same thing. If you have a smaller increase this year, you'll have a larger increase in the third year.
You can also, there are seats in the front here.
So what am I buying with my 5.7% increase that I wouldn't be buying with a 4.9% increase?
I guess the answer is I would have to make adjustments. If you don't approve a 12.9% rate increase, then I'll have to make adjustments to my operating budget or my capital budget. So I can't tell you off the top of my head what I would have to cut in order to meet whatever rate increase you do approve.
Could you come back by the end of the afternoon today after we've to come back on the BES rates to give me that information so that I can either make an amendment to lower it still further or not?
You'd have to tell me what my new target is.
I mean, that's fine, but we then are on the fly making cuts that have been through a very diligent process beginning in September of 2010. And I'm not sure to what end. I mean, if we're simply suggesting we're not going to approve the rate increase,
okay, but I don't know that at this point we can go back and, after having spent 9 or 10 months getting to this stage and spending quite a bit of time just finding the 1% the mayor asked, we spent probably 10 days working on that list. I mean, I get that it's a very popular thing right now to sit here, and I appreciate people saying we want to have an open and collaborative dialogue. Unfortunately, that's not been my experience. Some of the people that have testified here today, I had back in 2006 sit in a room and help pick the attorney. I said, and my only guideline was, you all, including Floyd Jones, Scott Fernandez, and Kent Crayford, two of whom are here, pick the attorneys. And my only boundary was, pick the best you think are the attorneys to challenge this law in court, and they picked a firm in Boston. I offered to fly them back to Washington, D.C. when the case was argued. All the points that you're all making today were articulated by the best law firm, according to some of the people that are sitting out there with you today, in front of a court in Washington, D.C., and I offered to pay those folks away. They found their own ways there. They listened to the oral arguments. We lost the case. The Public Utility Review Board has recommended unanimously, and I might say with some indignation, we want the reservoirs covered. We don't think we need to treat the water, which we all agree with, and we are in a variance process to do just that, not to have the water treated. But the process that we have used has been one of the most open, collaborative processes I think this city has ever engaged to, and has got us to the point where, yes, today we have to make a decision, and yes, today there are people that are still saying what they're saying, notwithstanding the facts are different than that. And it is time to make a decision, and it is time to move forward. And unfortunately, that day comes when you postpone those days. That day, it still comes, and we're here. And it's today that we have to decide to move on. And if I was passing the laws in the United States Congress, I would have voted differently than what our rep's done. But speaking of them, I've talked to Senator Merkley numerous times personally. He's gone to Senator Barbara Boxer, the chair of the committee that would give what you hear in people characterize as the waiver. She said, I will not allow a hearing on that bill or anything to that subject to exclude Portland. And so every avenue that exists, we pursue. We continue to pursue avenues with the state, but we have a timeline we have to stick with.
Thank you for that clarification. The 3.5% increase for LT2, as the mayor clarified earlier, is 1.8% for treatment and 1.7% for the reservoirs. And it seems likely to me that we are going to get the variance for the treatment. However, we won't get it by this the end of the afternoon. So what I'm thinking we should do for that piece of it is to have a budget note next week that we will evaluate the alternatives to the timeline, the storage options, and the treatment related to the LTT portion of the rates, and that if we get any relief, that rate increase, which we do have to decide on what the number is today, would then be applied to the rate stabilization funds and distributed in following years for rate reduction. I think that's, from what I've deduced, the only way that we can move forward on what we're being asked to do in setting the rates and also being responsive to the requests we've been asked to pursue with the states. The other big piece of the rate increase is the deferred rate request of 5.7%. And John Gibbon testified on behalf of the PURB and their Water Bureau subcommittee that they could not pass the endorsement of even 13% because they didn't agree with the increase in deferred maintenance. So my question here is, why not even out the 5.7, the 4.9, and the 4.3 for this year, the year after, and the year after, given that we're in the midst of the worst economic crisis of my lifetime, and many people are struggling to pay their bills? Why would we choose to pay the costs now? And there may be an answer to that. If you can give me a list of what the projects are and what the staffing is for why we need to pay that 5.7 now rather than evening it out and increasing the 4.3 in 13-14, I'd like to be able to consider that. But right now, I don't have enough information to be able to say that 5.7% is justified.
The 5.7% is paying for decisions that the Water Bureau and the Council and the Budget Committee and the PERB made in 2007, 8, 8, 9, 9, 10. You can say, I don't want to pay for that now. I want to pay for it later. But that's one of the issues that everybody's complaining about is we